So a new plastic film that can kill viruses with room light. This could lead to a significant reduction in the transmission of viruses like COVID-19. I'm joined now by Professor Andrew Mills. He is Professor at the School of Chemistry and Chemical Engineering at Queen's University Belfast. Hello to you this afternoon.
Hi, Ciara.
My first question, obviously you are working at Queen's University. Will the name of the university change now to King's University following the death of Queen Elizabeth yesterday? Or do you know how that works?
I don't know how that works.
Okay, it'll be interesting to see if things like that change over the next while and how they do so, because obviously crests and, you know, things like that put across the United Kingdom in terms of universities that hold the Queen's name. Anyway, this afternoon, yourself and researchers noted that they've developed the groundbreaking plastic film that's degradable and low cost. How did this discovery come about? Is it since the COVID-19 pandemic was declared that you were working on this?
Well, not quite. We knew that we can find very fine particles, very inexpensive particles, that when you put them in water, for example, that they'd kill bacteria and they'd kill viruses. The real catch was, how do you put them on a disposable surface, plastic film surface that you might use in a healthcare environment? Because what you do is, if you do put those particles in there, they're great, but they're trapped in the plastic. And what happens is that if you shine a bit of light on them, they actually eat away, they kind of chew at effectively the plastic, revealing themselves. And of course, once they've been activated in that way, they're good to kill pretty well anything that falls on the surface, bacteria and viruses in particular, the coronavirus.
So it's self-sterilizing, is it, this film?
Yes, exactly.
And how does that, like, basic question for somebody like you, but obviously very complex in my head, how does that come about?
Oh, okay. So it's really neat because it involves basically the particles absorbing light. What they do is they do chemistry on its surface, or they call it photochemistry because it's driven by light. And it generates a really low level of bleach, effectively, on the surface. And, of course, that's exactly what you want. You know, the way that we usually clean surfaces is to kind of, like, mop them down with some disinfectant. And that's what you're doing. You're kind of, like, destroying the viruses. But as soon as you've done that, the surface then gets contaminated again. This thing just maintains a really low level of this bleach, this oxidant, that will actually see off the viruses and bacteria.
And, like, is there a stage that you'll have to change it? Like, in terms of a time period, have you gone into the details there?
Yeah. So our focus has been on thin, disposable plastic films, because you see them all the time, whether it's aprons, whether it's curtains, whether it's tablecloths. They're commonly used in the healthcare environment. And, of course, they present their own ecological problem in their disposal. The nice thing about this technology is that it costs virtually nothing to add it to it, so you're adding value to an existing product. But it just gives you this extra value of being self-sterilizing and destroying viruses and keeping them clean. But these disposable materials were never meant to be used for weeks or months. They're usually used for 24 hours or 48 hours at best. And that's our focus.
Questions about the impact on the environment might follow up hearing news like this.
You would have thought so. But, of course, one of the add advantages of putting in something that actually eats away at the plastic is it destroys the plastic.
Oh, that's a very good point. See, that is why you're the professor and I am not. There you go. That's the exact reason. Obviously, you've noted that it's low cost. By and large, how much would this cost, would say, to kit out a hospital, a big city hospital?
So my guess is that I'd be surprised if it adds a penny to the cost of any of the thin plastic materials that they currently use, disposable plastic materials. So they already use these disposable aprons. We've all seen them. You know, you see the nurse and the doctors and stuff like this, put them on their white things. That's exactly what it would look like. It's just got this added feature to it, and it would cost, less than a penny.
And when would these possibly be seen in public places like hospitals, etc.?
Yeah, exactly. So, as soon as possible. That's all I can say, really. We're talking to companies about possibly,
Yeah, so kind of explain the process there, how you get the green light from companies and actually start to distribute it and getting them in place at public settings.
Yeah. So obviously a company that produces these thin materials already will look at it and go, well, do we want these materials? And of course, if there's no additional cost, then you think, well, they're just going to sign up for it. How they're made is by this by a large scale, what they call extrusion process, which is pretty easy. The only little catch to it is that they have to be activated. They have to have had a chew at the plastic first. And so we're looking at ways to speed that up. But the way that you would usually do is you shine light on it and then they'll destroy the surface initially, revealing the particles underneath, and then they're able to destroy the viruses. So, yeah, we've got to find companies who are willing to help us get these things out into the market.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time this afternoon. That is Professor Andrew Mills. He's professor at the School of Chemistry and Chemical Engineering up in Queen's University in Belfast. And he's just one of the researchers there working on that. It's really fascinating, especially after the past 2.5 years we have had. And I'm sure a lot of people would welcome something like that coming into place in our public settings in this country. Now, I did mention that there is a new poll by Alcohol Action Ireland revealing that there's strong public support for health warnings and alcohol labelling on products. But also we heard from the drinks industry of Ireland in the past 3 days, and they said that people in this country are paying more for a pint than 25 EU member states and the UK. And also today making the headlines is advice from the HSE in terms of mothers-to-be who are consuming alcohol. We have a few topics to go through this afternoon, and I'm delighted to say Dr. Sheila Gilheeny does join me now. Hello to you.
Hello, Ciarán. Thanks very much for having me on.
Well, thank you for the time, Sheila. We're going to go first to the new poll that was released by yourselves at Alcohol Action Ireland yesterday. Was it released?
Yes, that's right.
Yes, time is running away with me. Thank you. So 72% of people who were surveyed, who are consumers, they say they believe they have a right to be informed on the product and in advertising of the health risk from alcohol use. Only 11% oppose the move. Was that surprising figures to yourselves?
No, it doesn't surprise us, because I think people do have, well, firstly, I actually strongly believe it myself, they have a right to know, and consumer has a right to know, what's in a product and, the risks that might be associated with it. And but what is frustrating, for us is that while you have this very strong public support, for labelling of alcohol products, we're yet to actually see the labels being implemented on alcohol. So the state of play of what we have at the moment is that more than 10 years ago, such labels were first proposed and they were legislated for in the Public Health Alcohol Act back in 2018. And more than 3 years on from that, we still haven't seen them. The labels have finally been, published, and they have been sent to the EU because there's a process through which they now have to go.
Now, Sheila, just before you get into that, describe the images so people can understand what they would be seeing. Is it similar to what you would see on a cigarette box?
A little bit different, actually, from that. So on the cigarette box, you actually see quite graphic images. So these are more text text messages that are there, but also include kind of a pictogram, which is a warning about specifically about drinking and pregnancy. So the labels include, specifically a warning about that drinking alcohol can cause liver disease, and a specific warning that there's a direct link between alcohol and fatal cancers. There's also information about the energy, the calories, that are within the product, and how much alcohol in grams would be there, and information on a website, a HSE public information website, Ask About Alcohol, for more information. So it's text-based. It's giving, as I say, some information, and it gives specific details about the size of the label, the colour and things like that on it.
And one of the things you noted about what will be displayed is this health system intended to inform the public of the danger of consuming alcohol when pregnant in particular. And your survey release yesterday does coincide with today's release from the HSE in terms of mothers-to-be. They say those who are consuming alcohol when pregnant are risking their unborn baby's development. This comes on International Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Day. The disorders, they can be responsible for learning difficulties and behavioural issues in children. That is what the HSE have noted. And one of the head doctors with the HSE, Mary Hoffany, she has said that we have a very high rate of the disorder here in this country.
Yes, very unfortunately, here in Ireland, and it is estimated that we have the third highest rate of FASD in the world, and you know, which is it's such a sad thing to say the least.
Can I ask who's ahead of Ireland?
Excuse me. Oh, who's ahead? I apologies, but I just don't have that information in front of me at the moment. But this actually dates back to a paper from 2017. But as I say, it is a very, very high level indeed. The estimate is, you know, for FASD here is about 4.7% of, you know, babies being born here would have FASD.
And in terms of people getting in touch with yourselves at Alcohol Action Ireland in regards to that disorder, would that happen often?
You know, we would certainly be in contact with people, you know, who would be advocating like us, you know, for labelling of alcohol products, because we really do see that there's a kind of a bit of confusion really about pregnancy and alcohol. You know, there's, you know, people will get mixed messages. You know, sometimes that's, you know, people will say, oh, well, I drank in pregnancy and my baby was okay and things like that. So there's not always a clear message about it. So, firstly, it is great that the HSE are so clear and they do say very specifically that, you know, that there is no safe level of drinking during pregnancy. But this, to us, comes back, you know, to the need for labelling of alcohol products, you know, that very clearly state that. And so the people have that information.
Now, I want to ask you about a release from the drinks industry of Ireland. They, on yesterday, the 8th, yeah, that was yesterday, Thursday, they released this press release or economic report. Irish consumers, they pay more tax on a pint of beer than 25 EU member states and the UK. And the leaders of the industry, they say here, are warning of the impact of the high excess tax on consumers and the hospitality sector as the cost of living crisis worsens. A lot of people would say to yourself, maybe, Dr. Gilheeny, that with the past 2.5 years and with the fact that, you know, things are so expensive and people are trying to have some normality and, I guess, you know, happiness to an extent in terms of socialising, etc. And lots of people, unfortunate or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, do socialise throughout the country's pubs, etc. They won't want to see excess tax on items like alcohol.
Well, I think, you know, we have to look at it, two things here. The level of excise duty in Ireland has not increased since 2013. And obviously there's been, you know, considerable increase in overall, you know, prices in that time. So we would certainly be arguing that, you know, rather than reducing, we should be thinking in terms of index linking those excise duties to inflation. So that's one thing. The second thing that I would say is, you know, the amount of money that's actually raised through excise duties doesn't even remotely come anywhere near the cost of what alcohol, the cost of alcohol to Ireland, both to our health services and to the broader population. You know, so for example, you know, about 11% of our healthcare budget goes to address harms from alcohol, and that's just the healthcare budget. There's 1,500 people in hospital as we speak, as a result of alcohol. So I certainly don't buy any argument from the drinks industry that you know, we should be reducing the excise duties. It's just not tenable at all.
And Dr. Gilheeny, those 1,500 people, are they in hospital every single day within the Irish hospital system due to alcohol?
Yes, every day, 1,500 beds are used every day in relation to alcohol. But, you know, the hospital costs are enormous, but that's only just one aspect of it. There would be knock-on effects, for example, into employment, into the workplace. 1 in 7 workers are affected by the drinking of somebody else in their workplace. So there's, you know, considerable reduction in productivity in the country as a whole because of alcohol.
Now, it's September. Obviously, people have gone back to school, etc. But it means that a lot of people would have been abroad over the past few months and travelling in particular around countries like Spain and France. And this is something it seems like a lot of Irish people bring up when they do come back from holidays. The price of alcohol in the countries on the continent, much less expensive than here. What would you say to those that say those cultures don't have, I guess, as many ties to alcohol as the Irish culture may have, yet their alcohol is cheaper?
Well, first I would say actually that, you know, Europe is a very high drinking region. Globally, Europe is actually the highest drinking region in the world. And, you know, when we look at countries like France, as it happens, France also has considerable problems with alcohol. They drink actually at a similar sort of level as we do, and have all the same sorts of problems that would come from that. So if you were talking to public health experts in France, they too would be pointing to the need for, you know, a range of policies that would help to reduce that. And they certainly would be advocating for increased taxation on alcohol products there. So, you know, the nature of alcohol is it causes a problem no matter where you drink, you know, and that doesn't matter whether that's in France or whether it's, you know, here in Ireland, you will see similar effects and you will see similar problems.
Okay, and in terms of countries like Spain, you know, having, I guess, cheaper alcohol, does that ever come into conversation when yourselves at Alcohol Action Ireland are trying to portray, I guess, to others who may not realise the seriousness of the effects of alcohol?
Yeah, I mean, like, we can certainly point to, you know, similar problems, as I say, that would be there. I think too, though, when you are comparing prices between one country and another, you also have to remember, you know, there's differences in people's income levels in comparison. So, you know, Ireland happens to have, you know, higher prices for many things. You know, like food prices, for example, here are higher than in Spain. So it's not always accurate just to make a, you know, a direct comparison between the price of alcohol in one country compared with another, or, you know, because you also have to take into account, you know, an overall thing. But certainly the same principle applies. You know, the cheaper alcohol is, the more of it tends to get drunk, and the more that is drunk, the more problems that you will find. In fact, even things, you know, just going back to FASD, there is a very, very close link between the overall level of alcohol that's drunk in a country and the overall level of drinking and pregnancy that arises. The two tend to kind of match each other very, very closely. So, you know, one of the things that we would say that would help to reduce the levels of drinking and pregnancy that we have here is actually reducing the overall level of alcohol that is drunk.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time this afternoon. Very interesting to hear from yourself, the Chief Executive of Alcohol Action Ireland. That is Dr. Sheila Gilhaney, on a number of topics there, including, you know, the price of alcohol and the excess tax on a pint in this country compared to the other 25 of the EU member states, and then the UK, because there's 27 in total. And then also Alcohol Action Ireland's new poll revealing that strong public support for the health warnings in the alcohol labelling. And then, of course, as Dr. Gilhaney did note, FSAD, that syndrome that is fetal alcohol spectrum awareness disorder. And today is the International Day of it. And the HSE are warning mothers to be aware of the dangers when drinking while pregnant. Can you believe it's Friday? I just don't feel like it's Friday this week because I had Monday off. So I definitely feel like it's midweek, so I'm very happy that it's Friday, of course. Now, Bewley's Big Coffee Morning Social for Hospice is taking place across Ireland on the 22nd of September, so about 2 weeks away, is that right? No, less than 2 weeks. Okay, 11 days away. And we have the chairperson of the Friends of St. Bridget's Hospice on the line. That is Eilish O'Malley, and I'm really glad to speak with you this afternoon. How are you doing, Eilish?
I'm good. Sure, look, the weather's been so good this summer, even if we didn't get enough rain, sure, look, it's a good time to be alive and whatever, you know.
Absolutely. Yes, I actually think the same. I know it's been raining, you know, the past couple of days, but we had a really good summer. We were roasted out of it.
We did. Indeed we were, yes. Funny, when I know we're talking about the coffee morning, but just this is something unusual that we did this summer. Somebody who had had a bereavement got one of the vans to come in with ice cream to the hospice, right?
Oh.
And it was a lovely idea. So we continued that every month, you know, right through the summer. And people really appreciated something as simple as getting an ice cream. You know, it's the little things sometimes that matter, not the big event.
I mean, you know, just in saying that, you know, the little things that matter, I've heard a few people comment since the passing of Britain's Queen Elizabeth saying, you know, it doesn't matter how many jewels you have, how many castles you have, how many people who work for you. At the end of the day, we're all human and we all want the most simplest things. And I think that's why people are connecting with her death, is because they see a family in mourning missing,
indeed,
you know, someone so important to them.
Eilish, we're
obviously going to talk about the coffee morning, but just let us know about the Friends of St. Bridget's Hospice.
Right, okay. Friends of St. Bridget's. In case people don't realise, St. Bridget's Hospice is located on the Curragh, completely on the Curragh. You couldn't ask for a nicer location if you were looking to put a hospice. And I suppose hospice care is 100% patient-focused. So the patient is king, queen, whatever you want, in hospice care. And so what do we do? I suppose the HSE run the hospice, as in they pay the staff and everything else. But we take care of a lot of the other things because there's need. You know, like one of the things that we take care of, sounds funny, is Kennedy Security. They only are paid by the HSE for during the day. We take care of the rest, and that comes out nearly 100,000 a year. But we're happy to do those things. They make a huge difference to our patients in our hospice and the Curragh. And there's lots of little things that we do that make such a difference. Little lap blankets that people might like. A simple thing like that. A new clock in somebody's room. I'm just naming a few things that we do. Like we provide flowers every week for the area, I suppose, this front area of the hospice. Just simple things that people don't necessarily think of, but we do, and we have an availability. We also provide, we've set up a fund every year to help, I suppose, staff who want to further their education that will help them help the hospice. And that's powerful. We've set aside 20,000 each year for this fund that will help people to upgrade, irrespective of who they are, from whether it's somebody in whatever level of job you're in the hospice, you can avail of some of that funding to upskill, to help the hospice. So they're just simple things that I'm naming there.
Yeah.
But they're things that matter.
Absolutely, Eilish. And I guess to make yourself feel as comfortable and as, like, you know, homely as you possibly can, you know, being in a different place, you just hear fantastic things about St. Bridget's Hospice. And
you
so
do.
Many people donate to St. Bridget's Hospice for
indeed.
Different reasons.
Yes.
So
oh, yeah.
obviously you're doing something wonderful over there.
Well, we don't do anything. We are, like the Friends of St. Bridget's, we are the recipients of the funds that people give us, because they know, because we're a total voluntary group, every penny that comes in goes to hospice care. We provide extra care where the HSE pay the wages and whatever. So everything else we pay for, and it just works. Like, we provide the garden, and we pay to have the garden, I suppose, put in place, you could say, in the first instance. And we pay for the gardener to come in on a monthly basis. You know, it's something, but it matters, because if you're in a room, and each room in our hospice looks out onto part of a garden or a courtyard, so we want to have it looking well so that you can feel good wherever you are. You know, because people say you don't want to go to hospice, but when you do, you need to have comfort and care that's 100% you-focused. You know,
well, Eilish, so obviously, you know, mornings like Bewley's Big Coffee Morning are going to go towards the hospice. Tell us more about that. That's happening on the 22nd of September.
It's happening on the 22nd. What we're saying to people, look, some people have big coffee mornings where they take over a hall and they provide coffee, we'll say, 3 or 4 hours. Others have it in their own home and say they have an open house. Come in, we'll have coffee going all morning. Others, people say, well, I've got 4 or 5 friends, and they invite them in and say, we'll have a cup of tea and a cup of coffee and have a chat. And that's okay too. It's just the whole thing that every cup counts is what we say. You know, this has been the 30th year that the hospice coffee morning by Bewley's has happened. And Bewley's are really good because they provide the coffee, whether it's the ground coffee or whether it's the chars, or tea, because some people still drink tea. But no matter what you want to drink, it'll be available. And if you want, we provide, because we get it from Bewley's, then we distribute it out to people who need it right around the county.
And where is it happening on the 22nd?
I'm not going to say, because okay. It's happening all over the county. Literally from right in the south, from, I'd say, Monastrevin, up to Maynooth, Leek, Slip, Selbridge, which are
so
the
So I'll tell you what, Eilish,
we'll get
details off you closer to the time of the different places.
Indeed.
We'll do a run-through of everywhere that is hosting one of those Bewley's Big Coffee Morning Socials. It's a four hospice. It's taking place across the country on the 22nd of September. But Eilish O'Malley there is the chairperson of the Friends of St. Bridget's Hospice. And obviously many people here in this county will be very much aware of the work that St. Bridget's Hospice does do, and want to support them in any way they possibly can. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, Eilish. And changing tack here to one of the biggest gigs that may possibly ever take place in Croke Park. Garth Brooks is starting his 5 nights this evening in Dublin. There are already stories all over social media, the amount of people that are on trains, etc., absolutely hyped up, people trying to trick them, telling them different things like the concerts have been cancelled. They have not, but it's going to be a very busy few nights in Dublin over the next week as Garth Brooks does play those 5 gigs, and obviously us here in Kildare will be affected by it, because many of us use the rail services every single day. And I'm joined on the line now by Barry Kenny. He is of the communications with Irish Rail. Hello to you, Barry. How are you doing?
Good, Ciara. We're coming down in Stephens and Connolly Station here already, so it's quite busy already.
Oh, really? Are you going tonight?
I'm not. No, I'm not going to any of them. Some of my colleagues here in the department are all right.
But, and why wouldn't you go? Would you not? You're not a fan of Garth?
I actually did go when he was in the points in 1994, I think. I don't know. Great show, but as I say, not joining in this time.
Oh my God, 1994. I was 1 year old.
That's not fair.
I can't believe that he played. Was that the last time he played?
I think so. I think there was like 7, 8, 9 nights, something like that, in the point at that time.
So, whoa, 7, 8, 9. So that was about 11,000, 12,000, 7, 8, 9. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so he's getting to 400,000 tickets compared to, would say, near 90 the last time.
Yeah, exactly. No, so huge. And you know what I mean? It's just those shows, the scale of the event. And of course,
massive.
This is an event that's like
waiting for 8 years.
The anticipation of it. Exactly.
Absolutely. So you're going to go through some of the rail travel arrangements for the concerts, of course. Now, many of the trains intercity-wise have been sold out, and you note at Irish Rail, pre-booking really is essential.
It is, because with that level of demand, we obviously want people who are travelling those longer distances from around the country to the event to travel in comfort. So particularly the trains from Cork and Tralee, a lot of those are sold out for the concert dates already. But if people are travelling on the intercity trains, we just urge them to check irishrail.ie, book the train in advance, only travel on the specific train that you've booked rather than switching to another train either side, so that we can ensure that everybody has a seat. Obviously, we do have some of those intercity trains that will serve stations within County Kildare. We have some that stop at Kildare or Newbridge in particular. So we would stress to people in Kildare, it is best to travel on the commuter services from Kildare. One, because we've actually got commuter services back after the concert that you don't need to book. But two, as I say, they will be busy, they will be full, and there'll be plenty of capacity on the commuter services.
Yeah, Barry, just to go through the Dart and commuter travel, the services, the additional, are going to be operating after the concerts. So the Dart northbound and southbound, then Drumcondra to Maynooth. There's a connection there at Clonsilla to the M3 Parkway. Drumcondra to Longford, maybe some people going a little further afield. Connolly to Dundalk, Houston to Port Leash, Grand Canal Dock to Hazelhatch, Newbridge services in both directions, Barry. They're not going to be serving Drumcondra station. That's from about 3:30 approximately on each of the nights that he's playing. So Kildare people are going to be impacted, and just that's the main message to get out there.
It is, and as I say, we'll have a number of services starting at 10:55, going Drumcondra to Maynooth with the last one at 9:20. We will have 9:10 in Houston to Port Leash, and that'll serve all those stations like Hazelhatch, Salins, Newbridge, Kildare, Monastereven in County Kildare. But that's the Grand Canal Dock to Hazelhatch and Newbridge. That's the normal commuter services. They won't be serving Drumcondra, so as well, that's important for people who have no interest in Garth Brooks, as well as those that do, to be aware that if that's a train that you join or get off at Drumcondra. The reason for that is that because of the crowds that are involved, it's part of the Garda safety management plan for the concerts, so that we don't have, if you like, two train loads mixing on what are relatively narrow platforms at Drumcondra. So if you are using the Drumcondra, the Grand Canal Dock to Hazelhatch, Newbridge trains, use Connolly Station rather than Drumcondra. And also, anybody who is mobility impaired and who requires lifts as part of their journey, please use Connolly Station instead of Drumcondra Station for the concerts. There is actually a major lift renewal program which Drumcondra is seeing at the moment. But Connolly Station, people who do need lifts will be able to use that station and get to and from Croke Park from there.
Barry, thank you for the time as usual. Of course, communications with Irish Rail there going through those details. And if you did miss any of those, you can call us here at the station. We'll keep you up to date. But you can also head over to the Irish Rail website. It's just irishrail.ie. Contacting us here, 045-898-999 is the phone number. In terms of text and WhatsApp, that is 0833-97-97-97. And John has been in touch. How are you this afternoon? He says, Mr. Brooks is not doing much for the environment. Flying up from Kerry, could he not afford a hotel in Dublin? John, I do not know. Are you heading to the gigs yourself, John? I'd be interested to know. But I think it's mad. Flying up from Kerry for the 5 nights and then flying back. The house is supposed to be amazing. Cuiva saw photos. $7,500, I believe, a night or something like that. Maybe a week. Who knows? But he's selling 400,000 tickets at Croke Park for 5 nights of gigs. Garth